and welcome to another episode of Now About That with James and Sarah. I'm James.
And I'm Sarah.
And on this week's episode, we're gonna talk about some random stuff. It's gonna be a very random episode, and Sarah and I may go on rants, so buckle up, people.
Buckle up, buttercup.
No, we were talking before the episode and asking, or figuring out what we were going to discuss, and Sarah sent like three different topics, and it was like they're very all over the place.
Okay, but here's the thing. So I am still going through antidepressant withdrawals, and so this means that my brain going in overtime. I'm thinking about all the things forever. I have like 12 different things I want to say right now.
See, that's the thing. I've never had to experience that, so I don't know what that's like, because I've never taken antidepressants.
Don't get me wrong. Antidepressants are good and they can be extremely helpful. My experience with antidepressants has not been the most helpful. Pretty much the only thing that antidepressants generally do for me is prevent me from dying.
I mean, that's a good thing.
Depends on who you ask. And by who you ask, I mean me.
Your opinion in that matter doesn't count.
I'm aware. Anyway, but like, this last antidepressant, I didn't realize just how little interest I had in everything until I was off it. And like, antidepressants are supposed to help you be able to like live your life despite the depression.
Yeah.
But mine was just keeping me alive, and that was it. There was very little actual joy in a lot of things that I was doing.
Well, isn't it supposed to be like you're supposed to couple your antidepressant with therapy too? And you weren't really in therapy?
In some cases, yes. I probably would benefit the most from being involved in therapy, but therapy
is expensive. I don't think the answer is ever like the answer to any most things. I will say there's like diseases, obviously, like treating like cancer or something like that. Medicine doesn't always, especially when it comes to like mental health stuff, medicine will never 100% cure or treat any mental health illness. It has to be through like coupled with therapy most of the time.
Yes. There are people out there who benefit just from medication alone.
Yeah.
Usually in those cases, it's because their depression is not correlated to something else.
Yeah, it's typically like a brain imbalance in the brain.
If it's just a chemical imbalance that's causing the depression, then yes, medication alone works really well for those people. Yeah. My depression is not just a chemical imbalance. It's coupled with PTSD and anxiety and a lifetime of horrific events. Yay me. Anyway, so the medication alone, not cutting it. But I also haven't been able to afford therapy either. So I'm just living is what's going on.
And that is the United States medical system.
Yes.
Oh, geez.
But the good news is that despite the horrors of withdrawal, because let me tell you what, my brain actually feels okay for the most part. Like, obviously, yes, I'm still depressed because I have depression. But like, it's not as bad. However, the physical withdrawal symptoms fucking suck.
No.
Do not recommend. 0 out of 10. Pretty awful. And then you couple that with the early menopause that I'm going through because of my hysterectomy, and these hot flashes are out of control. I am sitting in an air-conditioned place. Okay. I was sitting at the doctor's office. I am in air conditioning. I am wearing a sleeveless short dress. Okay. And when I stood up from the chair, you could see my whole back drenched in sweat from these hot flashes.
No.
It was awful, and it's embarrassing, and it's gross, and I hate it. But anyway, you have exciting news though that I feel like we should.
So if you follow me on my LinkedIn, which is the only place I've actually posted it so far, I on April 17th will be starting my doctorate in education for leadership and innovation is what it's called. I will be a doctor in education of leadership and innovation. So it will be an EDD, not a PhD or an MD. So I can't treat your mental illness or give you drugs.
I know.
Or help you. So that's one of the things that I've been joking, like one of the people at my work has been joking about. He's like, well, if anybody ever needs anything, James Martin's going to be, it's going to be Dr. James Martin. So we're going to have to call him on the overhead and get him to come. And I'm like, I'm not a medical doctor. I won't be a medical doctor.
There's different types of doctors.
Yeah. So it's exciting. It's also kind of terrifying looking at like all the work that's going to have to happen. I don't really understand why I'm doing it, but it just sounded like something that would be interesting to do. And I think it's going to be, I think it'll be rewarding eventually. I think it's going to be a lot of work because I've been looking at the classes and the classes are, a lot of them are more like, there are some where we like explore what the schooling system or the education system looks like and what schooling is like. And then there's like the first couple of them are specific to leadership and then diversity, equity, and inclusion. So it's going to be interesting to see. But then like the last three classes are specifically for my dissertation because part of it is a dissertation and it's 50 credit hours or 60 credit hours because the whole degree is 90, but 30 of them were kind of given to me because I already have or because of my master's degree and the fact that I got my master's degree through Purdue Global. So they went ahead and took 30 of them, like gave me credit for 30 credit hours because I got my master's degree through them. So I have 60 credit hours and each class is 5 credit hours. So I have, what is that, 8 classes that I have to take? Mm-hmm. But of those 8 classes, 3 of them are specifically working for my dissertation. Mm-hmm. And like the first 5 are for like the information about like giving me the tools to present my dissertation. So I've been looking up like examples of dissertations and I kind of reviewed what a dissertation actually is. And I don't know that I've ever said dissertation this many times in my life, but I've looked up what it is and I read that it was like, it could be between 100 and 300 pages. And I was like, there is no way that I'm going to be able to write a 100 to 300 page paper. But then as I've been looking at some of the example papers, it's one of them is 90 pages. One of them that I've looked at is just over 50. And that includes like the table of contents, the title page, the references, any appendices that you have. So if you're doing like interviews with people, the transcript of your interview is included as an appendix. And like the questions that you're asking, that has to be like a pre-appendix. And if they're getting anything for the interview, like one of them that I looked at, they were interviewing persons with disabilities and asking them about their college campus, their college campus experience as a person with a disability. And I didn't like the way that they phrased it because they kept saying disabled person. I'm like, that's not how you don't call someone a disabled person. It's a person with a disability. So what I was going to say, so for them, they like, in one of their, a whole page of their dissertation was specifically like, this is the letter that I sent the person that has the disability. And in it, it's like, hello, disabled person. Again, terrible way. If I got that and I was a person that had a disability and I saw that and I was like, I'm not going to be part of your interview. I will not get an interview from you.
Yeah. If somebody called me a disabled person, I would not appreciate it.
It literally says, let me see if I can find it because I have it saved. I downloaded it and saved it to my desktop.
As an example of what not to do?
No, just kind of as what I was looking, like some examples of what are things people are reviewing. Mm-hmm. And see if I can find it. It's close to the bottom, so it's not going to be too hard to find. So yes, it says, it says, dear disabled student. And then it goes through like talking about why he's reaching out to them, the fact that he's going for my doctor an education degree in special education. And then it like defines the definition of ableism, saying that he's offering them an invitation to volunteer to do an interview with him via Zoom. And then it includes like what they will get in advance, like as a thank you for doing the interview. And for them, it's a $50 Amazon gift card. Not crazy. So it's interesting. And I found out something cool about my Remarkable 2, my like paper, my notebook, my digital notepad thing.
Yeah.
I can upload PDFs to it so I can read a PDF on it. Okay. Like it's a book. And I can also upload books on there too. So it's easier to read on that than it is on a computer to me. It's almost like having a physical book, but it's a little bit better because I don't have to actually have a book. Mm-hmm. But it's, I mean, I'm excited. Now I'm going to have to rack my brain on like, what am I going to write my dissertation about? And then that's something that we can maybe talk about, but I have 5 classes until that. So I have 1 class coming up and she was like, you can take 1 class or you can take 2 classes per term. I was like, let's start with 1 and I'll see how it goes. And then if it's not too much workload, I will take 2 classes after the first term. So we'll see how it goes. So aside from that, I could potentially, if I change to 2 classes per term after the first term, by this time next year, maybe within the next couple of months, you may be on a podcast with a doctor, Sarah.
That's going to be wild and crazy.
Yeah.
I'm very excited for it, though.
I am too. I'm still kind of trying to figure out why am I doing it or what am I going to do as my topic, but we will see. And I have I haven't seen Karen since I told her, but her and my friend Alitza at work were like, we both have said, if anyone can do it, it's definitely you. So we're excited for you to do it too.
I'm excited for you. Oh, I want to make sure I unmuted myself.
Yeah. So that was my exciting news. I do have something else, but I won't be able, I'm not going to talk about it yet because I don't have them. But I ordered something and I'm going to tell you whenever I get it. And then it'll be a surprise for you. And the podience.
And the podience. I love that.
Well, that's something I stole that from Ryland Adams and Lizzie Gordon.
Okay.
They call their audience the podience. I'm sure somebody else said it too, but that's where I know it from.
Speaking of podience, for whatever reason, because it does kind of sound like potty at the beginning, it reminded me of a conversation that I was having Wednesday night with Nick and Horace about whether or not Dadaism is a valid form of art.
What is Dadaism?
So let me pull up the actual definition before I give you my definition.
Dada?
Dada was an art movement formed during the First World War in Zurich in negative reaction to the horrors and folly of the war. The art, poetry, and performance produced by Dada artists is often satirical and nonsensical in nature. Now, this is not to say that I think all Dadaism is bullshit, but the majority of it is. And my main reason for saying that, it has to do with what we were talking about, which was a toilet, okay? There is a toilet that is signed, and that's it. And it's considered art. It's in museums. You and I have actually seen this particular piece of art. Let me send it to you. It pisses me off. I do not consider it art. I reject it as being artistic. I think it's stupid. But
I mean,
I know.
I haven't seen it. I don't know what she's talking about yet, so I haven't seen it.
Why isn't it giving me the actual one that we saw? Because there it is. Okay. Bum. I'm just gonna link in a new tab. Why are you gonna be a dick? Never mind.
So who like coined the term Dadaism though?
That
leading artists associated with it include ARP, Marcel Duchamp, Francis Picabia, PICABIA, and Kurt Schwitters. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so we saw that at the Eskenazi Art Museum in Bloomington, Indiana. And I remember telling you at that time that I did not think that was art.
Yeah, but I think my thing is art. I mean, like everybody always says, and it's kind of a pretentious thing to say, is art is subjective. And if you think it's art, if the person that is buying it and loves it thinks that it's art, then it's art.
And I'm just gonna politely disagree on that because I feel like art has to have some kind of meaning to it. I don't think it's meaningful to buy a toilet and sign your name on it. I can do that.
Well, maybe it's meaningful to the person. And just because it's not meaningful to you doesn't mean it's not meaningful.
Literally did it to prove that anybody will buy stupid shit.
I know.
And he was right, because it's stupid shit. The majority of the work that Dadaists do is emphasized on the nonsensical. It's not even satirical. There's no deeper meaning. It's all nonsense. It's all nonsense, and that's their way of saying everything in life is nonsense. But everything in life isn't nonsense. There's actually, here. Wait. Let me dial it back just a little bit because I'm getting a little too overwhelmed.
Sarah's spiraling.
Keep in mind that I'm still not medicated, okay? So I'm working on it. So here's my issue.
Okay.
I wholeheartedly disagree with the idea that signing your name on something that was manufactured by somebody else equals art. That toilet was not built by the artist. The toilet was not designed by the artist. The toilet, nothing about that toilet was created by the artist. The only thing that that artist did was sign their name on it. That's not art. That's not doing something crazy. That's taking, like, they're saying, well, this is mine because I signed it. No, it's not yours because you signed it. You bought it and put your signature on it and called it art.
It's the artist.
R. Mutt, 1917.
R. Mutt. So, 1917. Let's see. R. Mutt, artist.
But it's just like, and he did a urinal as well.
Yeah.
Which I, again, no. The answer is no. You're not adding anything to art. See, the whole point of art, in my opinion, like, keep this in mind, this is my opinion. And I know not everybody appreciates my opinions, but I like to give them out anyway, because they're free. So here, have my opinion, which is that if you're not contributing to the overall conversation of art and you're just signing your name on random things, that's not art. You didn't actually do anything. You signed a toilet. I can do that. I can go sign a toilet in, like, I could sign the toilet that I own here. I could go sign a toilet at the gas station. That does not make it art. I just graffitied somebody else's work.
So here is my argument for this conversation. So he is famous for other things, not just the toilet and the, it's this fountain, but it's clearly not a fountain. It's clearly urinal turned on inside. However, here is my argument for, I'm not saying it's cool. I mean, I think everything can be art if you kind of think about it. But maybe it's kind of similar to the way that people hold the signatures or autographs of a celebrity in the same way. Like there's monetary value associated with a signature on a piece of paper or on a napkin that they get from like a bar or something. So there's monetary value. Does that make it art? No. But does it make it where you can put it in an art exhibit and people will come and look at it? Yes, because somebody thinks that it's art. So technically, his signature is worth something and is associated to other art pieces that are not just these urinals and toilets. So it's kind of like he's autographing his own thing, which then kind of pushes it into the realm of this is art. What is your thinking of that performative art where someone is just standing in a room? Do you think that's art?
I don't. Like, don't get me wrong. I think that some performative art is cool and I would consider art. There's a Russian, I think she's Russian, performance artist who, like, one of the things that she did for an art installation was making eye contact with complete strangers for a specific amount of time.
I make people do that at work.
And so for me, I consider that art, but not in the same way.
So it's a form of art.
Yes, I consider it a form of art because she's not just talking about, like, she doesn't talk, like she doesn't talk during the performance. She's just sitting there in silence with this other person and looking into their eyes. And I believe that that has a lot to say about our connections to other people. And I do believe that that brings a bigger conversation to the table about art. It creates a dialogue about how we interact with people in the performance of art. Now, I think performance art where you just allow people to come and move you about and pose you specific ways, I don't understand that and I don't like it. It makes me very uncomfortable.
I could see why, but how is that different than staring at someone? Because you're basically, like, the commentary there, I would say, is probably like how you can, like, like how allowing someone else to make your moves is kind of like allowing someone else to have free reign over your body and removing your own self-autonomy.
I think that's the reason why I don't like it, is because as an AFAB person, my autonomy is always not mine.
But again, it leads back to, well, this is adding to the conversation and bringing up the conversation.
Right. And I'm not saying that I disagree on that end. But for me personally, I don't like it. And I don't think that, like, because, and I think the other reason why I don't like it is because it's a lot of mediocre white men who do it. Yeah. And they're not doing it based on the, you know, oh, I'm learning what it's like to be somebody else and not have any autonomy. They're doing it for some, like, big ego power trip bullshit. Like, I don't, okay, there, Shia LaBeouf did something like that, where people were allowed, like he was part of a performance art thing where people were allowed to move him in whatever ways. No, unimpressed. Not to say that
Shia LaBeouf is because it's Shia LaBeouf?
No, actually, because despite how fucking awful he is as a human being, I actually really like Shia LaBeouf as an actor. I've enjoyed the majority of things that I've seen him in. I do think he's a good actor. Do I think he takes things really far? Yes. Do I think that he's mediocre in other ways? Yes. He's also an extremely abusive human being who beats up his girlfriends. But, you know, my point is that...
That's alleged.
Let me take it back. No, I'm not going to say alleged. He's an abuser and end of story.
But
I believe people when they tell me that somebody hurt them. Like, if somebody comes and tells me this person abused me, until I have reason not to believe them, I'm gonna believe them. Which, like, I could talk about a whole other big hullabaloo drama that I'm going through that kind of situation right now. But anyway, but we're talking about art. So...
So I just think, to kind of circle it back and then kind of close out this conversation, I don't think that, I mean, you can say that it's not art to you. However, I don't think you can make the declarative statement, this isn't art. You can make the declarative statement, this is an art to me. Yes, that's fine. You cannot say, however, this is not art, because it is art to someone, which then makes it art. And the conversation that we're having kind of leads to the statement that it is bringing something into the discussion, and him doing that and making it like, this is a conversation about how anyone will buy anything. You just have to put your name on it. I mean, that's a conversation in art, which is kind of what you're saying art should be. It should be adding to the conversation and bringing something to the discussion. So
but
to me,
is you can't bringing positive things. Does it
always have to be positive? Art doesn't always have to be positive, does it?
I think that art should provide something to the person, like, regardless, because, like, that's the point of art. Art is supposed to make us feel things. And yes, obviously, there are going to be things that make us feel like trash. But I'm not going to lie. I am never, ever, ever going to think that a toilet that was manufactured, built, created by somebody else, and then just got signed by some pretentious fuck is art. Never. Not in a million years. Absolutely not.
It's not art to you. I will always make that statement. But that's my thing. You can't just, the issue I have with that is, like, you are saying this declarative statement that it's not art. However, if someone were to say something similar to, like, about I don't really know how to, like, what to think about, but, like, say one of your favorite writers is not a good writer, or they don't think that they are good at what they do.
Okay. And what's the reasoning behind that, though? Because, well, I'm providing reasoning as to why this is not
art. As to why it's not art to you. You're not providing reasoning as to why it's not art, because it can always be argued that it is, because someone finds meaning in it somewhere.
What meaning are you finding in a signed toilet?
I don't know. I didn't say I find meaning in it. I don't think it's very good either. I don't think it's art either, but someone does, and you can't make that declarative statement. It's not art. You have to add the qualifier on the end. It's not art to me.
I don't have to add the qualifier.
You should. I'll put it that way. You should. Because you can't make that because then the argument could be made to anything that you are saying, well, this is art to me. It's like, I think this is art. Well, it's not art to me, is the way you should answer it, because to someone, it is art. just like those crappy little pictures that are mass manufactured and you can go to any Target and get. To someone, that is art. To me, it's not. It's just a picture that someone printed and mass manufactured, and now it sells for $12 at any Target.
But see, here's the thing though, as far as like that goes, is like, yes, that shit is mass produced, but somebody made that. He didn't even make the toilet.
But he did something to it, and he
put some black marker on it with his name. That to me, no. What? I can do that. I could literally do that right now.
You could.
And nobody is going to think that that is art, because did I do anything with the toilet? Did I do anything at all? The whole point of art is that we are creating something. We're doing something. And if the fact that he didn't even build the toilet, like, okay, if he had made the toilet himself, if he had like paper mache'd it or whatever the fuck, he had like taken whatever courses he needed to like be able to make the toilet or the urinal himself, I would absolutely agree that it was art. You know why? Because he poured blood, sweat, and tears into that shit. He made it himself and then signed his final product. The fact that he bought a toilet that is mass produced, a urinal that is mass produced, not his own work at all, and then puts his name on it and calls it art is bullshit. Because I can do that. That's
you
not
could.
Art. You didn't create anything. You're not creating anything. The whole
you
point
could.
Of art is to create something.
I will just end. We'll move on from this, but I put the definition of art, the expression or application of human creative skill and imagination, typically in a visual form, such as a painting or sculpture, producing works to be appreciated primarily for their beauty or emotional power.
Created. Creative, created. It specifically says created.
Right, but
and
I mean,
did not create the toilet.
Do you see graffiti as art?
Graffiti, there's a difference. Like the random signature tags. No, I don't consider that art. Now there are people out there who go and they create these amazing, beautiful pictures, and that is created. They created that. They didn't just like spray paint their name on something. They created something.
But okay.
He signed yes. his name, and that's it.
So I'll leave it at this and then we'll move on, because I want to move on. The same thing with the graffiti, where you're saying just someone signing their name on the wall isn't art. It is art to someone, because someone finds beauty or someone has an emotional connection with that. And that is kind of the meaning and the reasoning behind art. So I will say that if you take anything, and this is to the people listening and
the audience,
partially Sarah, if you get anything from this, is I won't say you can't, because you can do whatever you want. That's legal. You shouldn't you shouldn't make a declarative statement such as "it is not art" without adding the qualifier "it is not art to me." Now we can move on. You wanted to talk about an experience you had in a cemetery.
Oh my god. Okay, so I've been on a journey, okay, and the journey that I have been on is trying to manufacture my own serotonin. Okay, I'm not gonna say that I'm doing a very good job, because I don't think I am, but you know, whatever. So anyway, so on Wednesday, I had enough points on my Dutch Bros app to get a free coffee, and I had a free movie ticket from my movie club that I belong to.
Oh yeah, I have something to say about this. Keep going.
But we're gonna go back to art here in a minute. So anyway, and so I went, I got my free coffee. I got my, I went to watch this movie. I watched Late Night with the Devil. What the?
Also, Ryan and I are going to go see that on Sunday.
Yes. And I can't wait for us to talk about that on the next podcast.
And this is where this conversation is going, because Ryan was like, oh, Sarah said she watched Late Night with the Devil. And I was like, why are you talking to my friends? I was like, wait, what do you mean? She didn't tell me that. And he was like, oh, she told me that. And I was like, why didn't she tell me? Stop talking to my friends. Get your own.
Okay, listen. I can be friends with your boyfriend.
No, you can't.
Yes, I can. That's the whole point. If I can't be friends with your boyfriend, then I would be telling you to break up with your boyfriend. Friend. Anyway, yes, I did tell Ryan that I saw Late Night with the Devil. I, for some reason, thought that I had also told you, but I obviously did not, and I apologize for that. But yes, I saw Late Night with the Devil. I don't know if traumatized is the right word. I just want to preface this by saying I went to a matinee showing, okay? I went and saw this movie in the middle of the day. It was sunshine out, like, what have you. At the end of the movie, I sat through the credits and I continued to sit there trying to process what the fuck I just watched for 2 minutes. Like, the lights in the theater had come up and everything, and I'm still sitting there going, what the fuck? And then I drove from the theater, which is about 15 minutes away from where I live. So, and it was 15 minutes away from the destination I went to, because I went to the library afterwards. So the whole ride to the library was silent. Like, I didn't turn on my music or anything. I just sat there trying to process this movie. So anyway, so yes, I can't wait for you to see it, you and Ryan to see it, so that we can talk about it. But anywho, so you finally saw Poor Things, though.
Yes.
Which circles us back around to art.
First of all, I do have a bone to pick with you. You did not tell me that there was that much sex in that movie.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're right. I should have warned you about that. That was my bad.
I was like, Jesus Christ. And I, the only things I've seen on it is like her sitting at the dinner they were having with the couple, and she was like, well, she spit it out, and the guy was like reprimanding her for spitting her food out, and she said if it's in my mouth and I don't like the taste of it, I spit it out, or I don't want it in my mouth, why leave it in my mouth, something like that.
Yeah, like, and if it is heinous to me, why keep it in my mouth?
Yeah. And so, like, those things that are funny. And then she's like, I need to go punch that baby. Those things. That's all I've seen of it. I didn't know that it was like she became a spoiler alert for anyone listening. She became a prostitute in part of it. And like, that's how she made her money, because she, in her mind, she was like, oh, I need money. I enjoy doing this. So I'll just move into this brothel because I need money in Paris. Mm-hmm. So there was a lot there. And it was, I think the most interesting part was like the fact that the guy brought his two sons to watch and learn. And she was like, oh, this is something people do. Okay. And then she like gave, like told them, here's what you can do to make it more pleasurable if it's something you like. It was interesting.
Yeah.
I liked the way that it was kind of, even in like the, and we watched a couple of videos on YouTube talking about it, but even in like the lighting that they used and how it started off black and white, mm-hmm. because that's how babies and people that are like of the brain age that she was in, that's how they visualize the world. They see it in black and white. And then once she like started learning and started doing more things, it turned into like this more kind of more saturated colors, because she's her mind is saturated by all the things that she's learning and everything that she's seeing and all of that. And then it turned darker whenever she went with the guy from the boat and saw the people that were living in like squalor, and they were dying and their babies were dying, and that it got darker, and she was wearing all like a bunch of colors, a bunch of different colors, very bright colors. But then when she went with him to do this, she was in all white. And it was kind of talking to the fact that that's the type of thing that they're giving you that experience by including the colors that are used and then the saturation levels. And
mm-hmm. I think it also goes to show like how innocent she is despite everything, like in that moment. And I don't know how it felt for you, because I'm not in any shape, way or form a man. But for me, that whole movie was basically just describing what it's like to be born as a girl. You're infantilized, then somebody hurts you on purpose to try to like change that softness about you, change that like innocence about you. Like it was a very emotional movie for me in that aspect, because it just really conveyed a lot of the feelings and experiences that I and many other AFABs have had. Because all the men in her life are constantly trying to fuck things up for her. Like, God doesn't want her to ever leave and learn anything else about the world. The one guy who's actually like pretty decent
yeah.
is is the guy that she's betrothed to. But like, that's not even her choice in the beginning. Like, they get betrothed because Willem Dafoe wants it to happen. And when Willem Dafoe says, you know, I just ask one thing, and the guy's like, what is on your shirt?
It's toothpaste, and I just noticed it.
I also just noticed it because you made it brighter by scratching at it.
Well, that's because I saw it. Sorry, I saw it in the camera, and I was like, oh, God, there's toothpaste on my shirt. Anyways.
But, like, he says, there's just one thing I ask, and the guy that she's getting betrothed to, whose name I cannot remember right this minute, is like, oh, I promise I'll never, you know, I'll never force myself upon her if she's not interested. That's an afterthought for Willem Dafoe, because he's like, oh, well, then I guess two things.
Yeah.
He doesn't even care whether or not, like, it's, she wants it.
Yeah, and I think that has to do with the way that he was raised, because it seemed like he wasn't raised with a motherly presence at all. And his father was very, like, science-based, even in, like, you could tell by his, like, the scars on his face and his hands and everything like that is because his father was doing medical experiments on him when he was a child. So he's kind of, his brain and the way that he's kind of set up is set up in that way because he was so abused as a child. So he doesn't see it as something that him, like, in his mind, he views it as she's just a science experiment. She's not an actual person. So all the things that he's asking, or he's telling her betrothed, whatever his name is, and we really need to look up his name, because I
cannot for the life of me remember his name at all, and I feel really bad.
So his name was Max.
Max, that's right.
Max McCandles.
So, played by Rami Youssef.
Yes. So hold on, let me finish my thought. So to him, the things like that thought of, I won't do anything sexually with her unless she gives her consent, to Dr. Goodwin, what's his last name? Baxter, or God, is Dr. Godwin? Goodwin, because his name is God. She calls him God. To him, it's, she's a science experiment. She's not a person. So it wouldn't have, like, that thought wouldn't have come to his mind. I'm not saying that's good. I'm not saying that's okay, but I'm saying that's where it came from.
No, but that's, and I understand that, but that's what I'm talking about, though, is that the fact that, like, I know that he is traumatized. I'm aware.
Yeah.
The fact that he's traumatized, though, does not make it okay for him to then traumatize somebody else, which is
right.
What he does.
Yeah, and I'm not saying it does.
And like, but throughout the whole movie, men are constantly trying to control her. Like when she goes off with, oh my God, Mark Ruffalo's character.
Duncan.
Yes, the most ridiculous last name in the movie. It's like Wedenberg or something like that. I don't, it's weird. Anyway, perfect example. He's just like, if you leave me, I'll kill you. And she's like, so my options are, we either get married or you're going to kill me?
Was
like,
that
that's
him?
Your proposal? Yes, that was him. And
sorry, go ahead.
No, that was him. It's when they're on the boat, because he moves her to the boat thinking he can keep her captive. And like, and then when she has a moment to like actually like see some of the outside world with Harry, the guy on the boat who takes her to go see the squalor, he literally tells her, I showed you that because I wanted to hurt you.
Yeah.
And like, these are things that,
well, it's not that he wanted to hurt her. Well, it's kind of that he wanted to hurt her.
He literally said, I wanted to hurt you.
It's because he was jealous of her kind of naive, or kind of basically,
yeah, her naivete. And here's the shitty thing, is that that's not uncommon. Men will constantly come in and try to dull your shine if you were an AFAB.
Yeah. To me, it's more, he wasn't, he did it the wrong way, but he was wanting to show her that there is more, there's danger, there's bad things in life. And it did kind of have the impact he wanted, in the fact that she kind of wanted to give whatever she had to those people. She didn't do it right, because she just gave it to two random sailors, and they definitely didn't give it to those people.
Yeah, they definitely didn't give it to those.
So I mean,
people.
There's another thing. Like, it's, the movie to me is just, it's a comment. It's talking about and showing you, like, all of your life experiences have a takeaway from them, and like that experience with him. What was his name?
His character name was Harry. I don't know his actual actor's name.
Yeah. So the experience she had with Harry, where she was going on, going to see the squalor and the people that are there, had the impact it was supposed to. And the fact that, like, her key takeaway from that is, it's not all sunshine and rainbows. There are bad things, and you're living your life the life that you're viewing, or the view of life that you're getting, is from a kind of more rich, a wealthy, kind of more privileged view on life. Whereas now you've experienced this part of the life that people have. And maybe, throwback to last week's episode, you can look at philanthropy and go into do things that are philanthropic and that actually give back and help make an impact in someone else's life. It's not a good way. He didn't do it correctly. I'm not saying that. However, the commentary to me is from that, it's you should view your life and look at what did you get, or what lesson did you learn from all of your life experiences, and make a positive, not a positive, because that sounds like you're trying to like validate someone doing something, but how can it positively impact your life?
But that wasn't his motivation at all.
I know.
He wanted her to be as skeptical and broken as he was. And he even tells her that. Like, that's for me,
how do you?
As an AFAB person who has experienced numerous traumas due to patriarchal violence, I cannot look at this bigger picture that you're talking about when he literally tells her to her face that he did it specifically to harm her, to hurt her, because he wanted her to be like him and be hard and cold and unfeeling, because the world is all trash anyway. He didn't want to show that to her so that she would become a better person or that she would understand her privileges. He did that to cause her harm. He literally tells her that. That's what he tells her. I did that to cause you harm. I shouldn't have done that because it was cruel, but I did it to you because I wanted to be cruel to you.
Yeah. And then what was her response?
Her response was to, I have to help.
Yes.
Which was good. Yes. Considering earlier in the movie, she literally said, I have to go punch that baby. And now she's crying over dead babies.
Which I 100% agree with. Punch the baby.
Don't punch the baby. Either literally or kiss a friend, please. Anyway.
Punch the baby.
She's literally a baby, though. Her brain is a baby brain that got put into an adult body. I know that's more spoilers. I'm so sorry. Whatever. You knew what you signed up for, because Ryan said spoilers.
I did
earlier.
Say spoiler alerts, yeah.
So.
But anyway. Go ahead.
It just, the whole time, she's just an object to everybody around her. And that's literally how it feels. Being an AFAB.
Yeah.
Is that you exist to either serve some other person or somebody wants something from you. It's never because somebody just wants you. They want what they can get from you. And it was like literally watching my life, like playing out there, like not with, like, actually no, even with all the weird random bits, because I have a lot of weird shit in my past. But like, it just, yeah. And so the fact that there were men in the theater with me laughing at the most inappropriate moments. Like, it would have been fine if they had laughed at the part about, like, I have to go punch that baby. Okay? Because that was funny. I didn't laugh because I was too wrapped up in everything else going on. But that was funny. Like, that was an appropriate moment to laugh. Laughing at Max saying, oh, I promise I'm not going to touch her without her consent. Not funny. Nothing about that was funny. At all. I know you're laughing right now, but I think you're laughing more at me and not
I'm laughing at you, yeah. Definitely.
But so, I'm just like, we got derailed again about the cemetery.
So, I mean, I think I really enjoyed it, and I thought it was really nice. It was shocking. Like I said, I didn't realize there was as much nudity and sex in it as there was. But I liked the growth and like how it was talking, and it showed how each of these different experiences molded her. And then the choice, the way that she chose to react to those experiences helped mold the way that she, what she was finally, like her final form and what she was able to do. And she was all of this stuff was her being blindly, if not naively, naively curious about it, in a way that potentially could cause her harm. Because, I mean, obviously sleeping with a bunch of random people in a brothel, there's a lot of things, although one of them, I don't think she, I took it that she couldn't get pregnant just based on
commentary. Yeah, because I think when he was doing everything that he removed her uterus.
Yeah. But I do find it interesting that when they finally she finally got back to the house and her god passed away, she was walking with Max and talking, and she asked him if he was still interested in marrying her and being married to her. He hadn't passed away yet, but being married to her while she, with all the experiences she had and knowing that she had been a hooker in a brothel, an escort in a brothel. I don't like the word hooker, an escort or a hired sex worker in a brothel.
Wait, hold on a second. Just real quick. Hooker used to be your favorite word.
Well, it's different in this instance. Moving on. she was asking him if he was still okay and if he understood that she's not his to have, and if she wanted to experience things still, she was going to. And the way that he responded to it and said, no, it's fine, but have you been tested? She's like, or do you have any, I don't remember if he said, do you have any diseases or did you get tested? And she was like, no, but I'm going to.
Right.
So it was a good kind of that, what you were experiencing down in Texas, polygamy, and the ability, the changing relationships with, it's not just you're married to one person for the rest of your life. The traditional, the commentary on that, it's not everyone needs the traditional one man, one woman, or one partner relationship to be happy. Mm-hmm. And people can say, if you don't like that, then we don't need to continue with our relationship. I was very, I really liked the way that they handled her husband when she found out that she was actually married to someone. Mm-hmm. I don't remember what her husband's name was, and it was a very small part, so it wasn't very long. And the way that they handled it, and she was like, that's where I was confused, because he basically, like he said, if you try to leave, I'll shoot you in the head. That's where I was confused with the Mark Ruffalo character. Yeah, I didn't
Mark
realize.
Ruffalo also threatened to kill her.
No, but she was basically, was it Alfie Blessington? Is that his
Alfie.
Name?
Yeah, I think.
Yeah. So her husband, she found out that she had a husband, and she, like, her thing was, my name is Bella Baxter, not whatever her husband, like, whatever she was when she was married to him.
Right. It was like Victoria, I think, was her name when she was married to him.
Something like that. And he was like, well, you're my wife. And her thing is, no, I'm not, because she's technically not. Her body is, her brain is not.
Right.
So
brain is his child.
Yeah, which is weird. But he didn't know that, which is the thing. He just thought she had amnesia. Mm-hmm. Doesn't make it okay. But I do like the way that they approached it. And she was like, well, I'm going to leave whether you like it or not. And he was like, he pulled the gun on her, and she was like, then shoot me, because I would rather not live with you for the rest of my life. I would rather be dead. And then the way that it, like, she knocked it, or she pushed it down, and it shot him in the foot. And then she took him back to the house and put a goat's brain in him.
Which I 100% love.
Shockers. Yeah. Not shockers, but
I was actually surprised, because for a hot second, I thought she was going to, like, I don't know. I got really scared when she and Max were, like, both with God, and they were, like, there for his final breath. And I knew that she had her husband, and I was like, please don't put God's brain into that body. Please.
Oh, yeah. I didn't even think about that.
That was my first thought, was like, please, please don't do that. Please just let this poor man rest. God damn.
And then I saw the goat, and I was like, she's going to put the brain of the goat in his brain.
And the goat. And I love that very, very much. So I was just going off of what the number of times that she actually gets threatened with death by intimate partners. For those who might not know, according to the U.S. Federal Bureau of Investigation, an estimated 4,970 female victims were murdered in 2021, and one third of them were documented to have been killed by an intimate partner. So that's the fact that she, like, people, if people were thinking, you know, oh, this is, you know, a little extreme, like, nobody's getting death threats like that. No, that's a regular thing that happens. And then if you look at the actual Bureau of Justice statistics, 34% of those women were killed by an intimate partner, where in comparison, while more men were murdered that year, 17,970 men were murdered, only 6% of them were by intimate partner violence, which means only 6% of them were killed by their female partners out of 17,970 versus 4,970 female victims, and 34% of that 4,970 were murdered by men that they knew, like men that they were in relationships with, men that they were supposed to be able to trust and care about. So just like your little fun fact there.
Yeah. Interesting statistics. And I mean, it's from what, if you like think about it, a lot of the times when someone does die and they have like a significant other or they're married, like they're in a relationship where they're married, the question always is, where was the spouse or where was the significant other? Because most of the time, statistically speaking, it is that person that is the person that murdered them.
Correct.
Unalived them. We're not monetized, so I don't know why I'm worried about getting
dinged. Was gonna say, like, I've been dropping the F-bomb this entire episode.
Yeah.
But anyway, so I went to the library after late night with the devil, which is originally where we were going with this.
Yes.
And then we got off track. I got way off track. Okay, I'm not medicated right now, leave me alone. Anyway, I am really passionate about making difference in small differences in your community, because the most important, for example, like the most important elections that you're ever going to have are your local elections, because who you vote into office in the local elections affects who gets into office in other elections. Because since, you know, the Electoral College and all that bullshit, like whichever way your particular community's swing is usually what's going to dictate how the rest of the country is going to swing. So one of the things that I had been thinking about a lot recently was I just kept feeling this need to go to a cemetery and like just clean up a little bit, you know, because like oftentimes cemeteries get really neglected. I mean, yeah, people come out there and they, you know, mow, but when they mow, they just leave the grass on like the headstones. Some of the headstones you can't even see because they're covered in grass now. And like, it's like nobody cares. So anyway, so I was like, okay, I have time before it starts raining. So let me go and I'll go clean up as much as I can.
I will say just to kind of put something in there. I think that's more about the people that are managing the graveyard than the people that are doing the maintenance, because they're hiring the people to do it. And if they continue to let them like not clean up the graves or whatever, then they're going to assume it's fine. Or maybe they're not paying them to, they're just paying them to mow. They're not paying them to collect the grass or do anything like that. So it may just be, it's not always the cleaning crew or the maintenance crew. It's sometimes that the people that are running the, which is not okay either, but the people that are running the cemetery that are saying it's not important to clean up the grave.
Yeah, no, and I recognize that. I personally feel like it's important to like clean off the stones and like, because, you know, the whole point is for these people to be remembered and to have like some kind of longevity past their physical body. I just also think that cemeteries and graveyards specifically are very sacred, hallowed ground and deserve to be treated as such. So I went to the local cemetery off of Sam Bass in Round Rock. That's the closest one to me. And they have it's a distance away from me. I'm not giving away my actual location.
Jeez, Sarah. Invite people to your house, why don't you?
No, I'm good, thanks. But anyway, there's a slave cemetery attached to the cemetery. And you can tell that nobody cared for those stones at all. They're all completely broken. You can't even read the names on them anymore. And that really hurt my heart. It made me really sad and upset. And I rage cried for like 2 hours afterwards. Gave myself a migraine. It was great. But it's really put into my mind that I feel like specifically, I'm going to petition the city of Round Rock to like try to fix these things up. Like, I know that we have records of everybody who's buried in the cemetery because one of the signs that they have in there says that they have the records. So I'm like, okay, so what we need to do then is we need to consult those records, consult the genealogy records, figure out, you know, who all these people are, and like fix up this area. Because right now, the only person who it appears has gone over there other than to mow was me.
Yeah.
Like, there were no flowers, there was no nothing. Like, I mean, I guess in that way it was good because there's no trash over there, but then at the same time, nobody's taking care of them either.
Yeah. And it could, I mean, it could also partially because there's no record. Well, there's records, but the family of those people may not know that they're there because their descendants, whatever, may have moved from the area. So there's no record of them being there. So it could possibly be that it's not that the family is there and they don't care. It's that the family may not know.
Oh no. And I'm aware of that. I'm not accusing any families of like neglecting their relatives' gravestones. Like I'm not accusing anybody other than the city because they've been there since the 1800s, obviously, because slavery supposedly ended in 1865, but you know, unless you're Mississippi, in which case it ended in 2014 legally. But just the fact that they know that they have records and they're just leaving it like that really bothers me because first of all, African people did not ask to be kidnapped and brought over to the United States and enslaved. So why the fuck? Like it really made me angry. It really made me angry.
And rightfully so.
So I am planning on petitioning the city of Round Rock to utilize whatever funding they have, and I'll raise money if I have to, to not just restore like those parts of the cemetery, but to give those people back their dignity, some of their humanity, because they had it stolen from them repeatedly by, you know, the people who enslaved them. And the least I feel like we can do as a country, as a whole, is make sure that those people at least have a nice place to rest and have some way to be remembered. So if y'all care about things like that, if anybody's listening, I highly recommend going to your local cemetery and seeing how you can help clean it up and make it a nicer place for people who have to live there.
You should, before Monday, go to like petition.org or whatever and get a petition started, and then give me the link and I can include it in the description of the podcast.
Yeah, I can do that.
Yeah.
I have to like go to the library and do some research and whatnot. But I'm planning on doing that tomorrow. So okay. Yeah,
I totally whenever you have a chance, just put it together and then send me the link and I'll make sure to put it in the description of the podcast. So those of you that are still listening, look in the description of our podcast and you should see, hopefully, if Sarah has it for me, a link to the petition that Sarah is going to start for this Round Rock graveyard. Do you know what the name of the graveyard is?
I believe it's called the Sam Bass Graveyard Cemetery because Sam Bass is buried there. For those of you who don't know, Sam Bass was an outlaw, and he was part of the Sam Bass Shootout, which was a unifying event for Round Rock at the time because they were a fairly new town. So anyway, yeah, there's that. But anywho, you can find that on the City of Round Rock website. But yes, the cemetery that he's buried in is called... Oh, and by the way, Sam Bass was born in Indiana, just as an FYI. He was born on a farm 2 miles from Mitchell.
Someone who breaks the law that was born in Indiana? No.
I know, right? Super weird. Anyway, where does it say? I'm scrolling. I'm trying to find it because I know it has it in here. Capture and death, blah, 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 blah. Sam's sister had a tombstone erected on which was engraved the following epitaph. A brave man reposes in death here. Why was he not true? It had to be replaced though, because so many people were chipping away at it for souvenirs, which is disgusting. But anywho, fuck, why does this not say the name of the cemetery? I guess it is just called the Round Rock Cemetery. It's off of Sam Bass Road though, so.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to have to figure it out anyways because of the petition that you're going to start. So we'll figure it out and put it in the description of the podcast along with this petition that Sarah is going to start. and we'll go from there.
Anyhow.
So I know you had another we're at an hour and 17 minutes, although a lot of it's going to get cut out because there's a lot of long pauses and I can't handle it.
You know what? That's fair.
I know there was another topic that you wanted to talk about, but let's put that on hold for the next podcast. And then I do want to ask, just as like a quick thing, you said all this about cemeteries, but when you pass, do you want to be buried, cremated, or what do you want done with your body?
I used to make the joke that I wanted half of me to be cremated and the other half thrown in the ocean to the sharks. but that is not true. That was a joke. I would like to be cremated because I am claustrophobic, and the idea of being put in the ground mortifies me. So I would much rather be cremated and have my ashes spread somewhere really nice, or made into jewelry so that I can be passed down to cursed generations. You know, these are the family jewels. It's literally just me in jewelry form. Look on your face.
Well, I'm also typing, and I don't know why, for some reason this week in the Google Doc that we have that Sarah never uses. instead of link for this week's episode, I put text for this week's episode, because I usually, if we like talk about things and when we look them up, I include the links in the Google Doc so that I can just grab them from there and put them in the
website.
Put them in the episode and then the website. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I was, for some reason, for this week, instead of links from this week's episode, I put text from this week's episode. Like I'm taking it, like I'm transcribing. Yeah. That's never going to happen.
That's not going to happen. I should go through and transcribe our episodes, but
actually Apple Podcasts now has this really cool thing where it automatically adds the transcription to a podcast.
Nice.
And I was like, I wonder if it's for everyone or if that's something like the podcast has to pay extra for. It's not. It does it to all of them.
Love that.
So any episode that gets uploaded to Apple Podcasts automatically has a transcription associated with it.
Love that.
It's very cool. I don't know that you can like download the transcription or anything, but if you're listening and you choose it, the words come up on the screen.
Nice.
Very cool. So we will push that topic on American child labor, which thank God, because this is a very deep podcast anyways. We'll push that into next week's episode. But I will include a link to vote.org because you did bring up the local elections and that stuff. So there on vote.org, there's a lot of information that you can find in what's going on in your local area. Who are your elected officials? What's on the ballot? Because sometimes if you don't know, there are things that you can, as a resident of the state, vote on, whether or not you think it should be a law or not. I said not three times there.
That's all good.
So always look up that. And then I would always just look up the people that are running in your local elections. Yeah. We have until November. So unless there's a special runoff election, we have until November. So review the people in your area. Find what fits for you.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Agreed.
Well, ow, ooh, cramp in my arm. Weird.
What are you doing this weekend?
I have to drive up to Farmingham to pick up a prescription because for some reason they can't send it anywhere else. So I have to drive at 30 miles one way to pick up a prescription.
Gross.
And then edit the podcast. And then Sunday, like I said, Ryan and I are going to go see Late Night with the Devil. Mm-hmm. So we'll go see that Sunday. Oh, shoot. We said we were going to talk about trans visibility.
Yes. Trans Visibility Day is Sunday. So while you're also celebrating Easter, if you celebrate Easter, also celebrate the trans men and women in your life.
And maybe go back and listen to our last episode, not our last episode, two episodes ago, where we talked about trans women.
Yep. And how important trans women have been for the forward motion of LGBTQ+ rights.
So you will be listening to this on a Monday. So it'll be after, although maybe I'll release it on Saturday. Maybe.
That's an option.
Maybe instead of Monday this week, you'll be listening to this on a Sunday on Transvisibility Day?
I think it's Transvisibility Day. Also, as a reminder, that trans people fall along a spectrum like everybody else does. So even if somebody doesn't transition in the way that you think that they should, they do not owe you like matchy matchy. They do not owe you an actual transition for their gender identity to still be valid. And also, I'm genderqueer, so.
Transgender Day of Visibility, March 31st. And I will include some links to organizations that have some information about Transgender Day of Visibility in the description of this podcast, too.
Woot woot.
Well, what are you doing this weekend?
This weekend, let's see. I'm probably
crying in more cemeteries?
Probably. I've been crying a lot recently, just about anything and everything. Probably because I'm unmedicated. But these withdrawals are wild, y'all. I do not recommend. Anyway, I'm going to go to the library because I have to return a book that I'm about to finish reading. And also to do some research in their genealogy section to see if I can find a layout of the cemetery. Because if any place is going to have it, it's probably the library.
Yeah.
And then Sunday, Nick, Horace, Kat, and I are having an Easter barbecue at Nick and Horace's. We've invited a few different people. It should be a lot of fun. I'm really excited. Nick has apparently gone all out and made each of us Easter baskets. And I was just like, I cannot afford to make a whole basket, but I did get you something cute.
That reminds me of that. I can't remember who it was, but it was this, I think it was Australian. He would walk around the grocery store and come up behind people. And then he'd be like, "Ooh, this is fabulous. It's going right in my basket."
I love that. I love everything about that. So I bought him a dinosaur. It's a brontosaurus with bunny ears. Like, it's the cutest fucking thing. And the reason I can say that is because I know he's not listening to the podcast.
Also, this will be going out after Easter anyway.
Exactly. But also, I don't know. He might listen to the podcast.
I know someone who doesn't listen to the podcast who told me they didn't listen to the podcast.
Was it Ryan?
No, it was Sarah Smith.
I listen to the podcast sometimes.
And Samantha, our best friend.
I know Samantha doesn't listen to it.
Ryan doesn't listen to it either, no. I know, but you didn't listen to last week's episode because I added something into it that's funny because we talked about it. So I clipped the sound and added it into the middle of the podcast.
Well, now I'm going to have to go and listen to the podcast so I can hear it. It's
at like the 40-minute mark. So do you want to just scrub through and get to at least the 40-minute mark? There you go.
It's not that I don't want to listen to the podcast. It's that I'm a part of making the podcast, so I don't always feel the need to.
I have to listen to it multiple times because I edit it. And I listen to it every week. I also listen to it every week so that I know what it sounds like, not only from my headphones, the computer, and my phone, but also if you're listening in a car, what it sounds like.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I will say I am a lot louder than you now that I have this microphone.
That makes sense. I have a microphone. I just keep forgetting to set it up.
Yeah.
So, anyway.
Well, would you like to call it a podcast since we're about an hour and a half in?
Yes.
So this is going to be a very long Easter / Trans Day of Visibility Awareness / Sarah telling people art is art.
It's true.
/ sign the petition. Sign Sarah's petition.
Yes. Once I have that all up, yes, sign it. Do the thing. Take care of your local dead.
Jeez.
It's true.
All right. Well, do you want to call it a podcast?
Yeah, we can call it a podcast.
All right. Well, thank you for listening to this week's episode of Now About That with James and Sarah. If you like this week's episode, please give us a like, a comment, and don't forget to follow or subscribe. If you would, leave us a review in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. This will help get the podcast out to more people and help the podcast grow. Feel free to follow us on our social media. Our handle everywhere is at Now About That Pod. So if we don't come up in the search, we are not on that platform. If there's anything specific you would like us to discuss on the podcast, podcast, feel free to email us at nowaboutthatpod@gmail.com. Visit our website, www.nowaboutthatproductions.com, or you can also call and leave us a voicemail or send us a text message with any questions or anything you would like us to discuss. Our phone number is 765-557-4170. Thanks again for listening, and we hope you have a great week, weekend, and enjoy your Easter if you celebrate it, and Trans Day of Visibility if you when you celebrate it. Other than that, have a great week, weekend. Sarah, enjoy your weekend.
You too.
Bye, everybody. Bye.